Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, who, despite vicious rumors to the contrary, is not on the trade block. I don't care how many first-round picks you offer, how many Etch-A-Sketches, how many snacks. Lenny is part of our long-term plans at the Mina Kimes Show. We are not rebuilding here. We are not tanking yet. It's still early. This week, I am joined by my friend Charles. Friend, is that okay? Can I call you a friend? I just dropped that really casually without vetting it first, running it by you.
Yeah, we can be friends. Okay? That's cool. We're friends.
Okay, so I'm joined by my good friend, Charles McDonald. Charles is an NFL writer at SB Nation. Charles, what's good?
Nothing much. Just feeling good. Blessed to be on the show. I listened to the episode last week with Danny, so I'm really excited to be here right now.
Do you think you can beat Danny?
I always think I can beat Danny, so absolutely.
Wow. There's a little, I'm trying to like make my guests go Hunger Games on each other and, you know, just stir like a little competitive fever between them. Charles, you have everyone who's been on the show beat in one regard, which is that you are infuriating. Well, first of all, you're the only guest on this show who I messaged, please don't get me in trouble, I think. And I mean it, please don't get me in trouble. You are also infuriatingly young, 24 years old, very, very young. That's a peak NFL age, unless you play for the Oakland Raiders, in which case it's way too young. Actually, so before we get to the games, I do want to talk, you know, about some of this hot trade action, speaking of the Raiders. So this morning, recording on Wednesday morning, we've got the Giants who are trading everyone. They're kind of giving the Raiders a run for their money now because we had the Eli Apple to the Saints yesterday, which to me says more about the Saints than the Giants, given that the Saints just don't want to pick in the draft next year, apparently. I think it makes sense given, you know, Ken Crawley's not been very good and that's obviously a hole for them and they see themselves as Super Bowl contenders. What do you think about this Damon Snacks Harrison is being traded, who's still a very good player, from the Giants to the Lions?
To me, it just kind of looks like the Giants are out on this season, which makes sense. I mean, they're 1-6, and at 1-6, you really have no chance of salvaging this season when you look at how Eli Manning played in the red zone on Monday night against the Falcons and generally how he's played this year. I mean, the offense can't get going at all, so I guess if you're looking for a long-term rebuild, you might as well just get as many picks as possible in the next few drafts. You know, I think it's funny that the Giants didn't think they were going to be here at the start of the season. And now that they're 1-6, they're kind of like, whoa, we need to get this thing back on track. And to do that, you kind of got to get these picks in for the 2019 draft. I don't know how much a fifth-round pick helps you. I know that Snacks was going to be a little expensive, but I feel like you'd rather keep Snacks at his deal than whatever that fifth round pick is going to do, because the likelihood is it's going to be a special teams guy or someone who just doesn't make the roster at all. So you'd rather, at least to me, like I know that run stuffy nose tackles are kind of a dying breed and their importance is dying, but he's still one of the elite players at it. I know if you just look at Pro Football Focus's run stop percentage, he's literally the top guy from 2012 through 2017. So that's five straight seasons of being the best run defending nose tackle in the league. And if you look at it from a Lions perspective, they have the worst run defense in football. So now you get Snacks with a defensive line that's been surprisingly great at rushing the pass this year. I mean, Deshaun Hand has come out of nowhere after being the number one recruit in the nation to doing nothing to Alabama, really. And now he's one of the best.
He's been good.
He's been really good after having a really quiet college career. So you have the pass rushing upside already there, and now you have the monster Snacks in the middle. So, you know, that defense could actually make some noise maybe as you move through the NFC North, and it's a competitive division up there. So if the Lions feel like they can contend, I think this was a brilliant move for me.
Lions, who I described on Twitter last week as the most who the hell knows team in the NFL, although there's like three or four teams I put in that category. I'm with you though. I think Snacks is great. Two thoughts on Snacks. One, I think if you didn't wear that mouth guard with the teeth, which I don't know why more defensive players don't wear those with, you know, where they have like the pointy teeth, that's terrifying. He would be a lot less scary. And two, I remember when I first heard his nickname, I thought, oh, maybe there's like some cool story, like, about a play he made or something. But no, he was just fat shamed by one of his coaches for eating too many snacks. And so it is literally, that's the origin story of the nickname. It's funny because you, Charles, I like that you brought up how the Giants clearly didn't see this rebuild coming and now they're in panic mode. In some ways, actually, I think that reflects favorably by comparison on the Raiders, who I've not been quick to praise John Gruden like most of the NFL media this year. I was shocked by the return they got for Amari Cooper, given, you know, how much time he's got left on his contract and how he's produced over the last two seasons. But at least the Raiders, it feels a little bit more, I don't know, earlier on, I guess, it seemed like Gruden came in, saw the score, and you can agree or disagree on the Mac trade. I think it's actually a little bit more debatable than maybe some people treat it from the Raiders' perspective. But, you know, he clearly came in there, looked around the roster, and said, this is trash. I'm burning this whole thing down. And I don't have a lot of faith in his ability to use those picks, given the aforementioned, you know, his fondness for people older than you, Charles. But at least, like, there's a plan there. You know what I mean? Like, my feeling with NFL teams is, like, if you're going to go all in, and get those picks. And I don't know. We'll see. I mean, as far as the Amari trade, like I said, I didn't think they would get that much for him when it was reported. I heavily scoffed that they wanted a first, and then they went out and got one. From the Cowboys' perspective, I understand there's like, they think they can win the NFC East. They want to evaluate Dak, I'm guessing, and they probably like that he's on the same timeline as him, but man, that's a lot for Amari Cooper.
Yeah, it is. And I think one funny thing with the Raiders is you feel a lot better about their draft class if you look at it in reverse order almost. Like if you start at Maurice Hurst.
Yeah.
And kind of work your way down from Hurst to Arden Key, and then you come back as Colton Miller as your last pick. Oh, we took like a swing tackle who has some upside with our last pick. It kind of makes you feel better. But I just thought the process with their draft class this year kind of puts you to pause with what they're going to do with these three first-round picks. I mean, they had a huge need at safety, and they passed on Derwin James twice and let him fall to a division rival. And then John Gruden comes out and says that Derwin James was someone that he liked a lot in the draft, but like, why didn't you pick him? You had two opportunities to. And it's just, when you say stuff like that, or when you trade Khalil Mack and complain about the pass rush every week, it just kind of gives me a little pause as to like, what's the long-term plan here? Or maybe John Gruden has this mastermind plan in his head and he's just saying stuff to the media.
Okay. No. I had to get in there because I'm so glad you brought that up because I forgot I wanted to mention it. So, our Kevin Clark, who's an NFL writer at The Ringer that I think we both know, was tweeting mm-hmm. something about how he did one of those memes, like almost like a Spider-Man meme, but it was Gruden and Sam Hinkie as a joke. But because Gruden is the value god now, because he got, you know, this return, he's collecting picks, this stuff that people like you and me and Kevin generally like. And so Kevin and I were DMing about how, what if this was like all a long con by Gruden, like pretending like he doesn't like analytics and he doesn't like technology? Like, what if this whole time he's like a religious Football Outsiders almanac read? Like, he's just gonna bust, like, he's been playing dumb this entire year.
I don't know if I could buy that. It's so hard to buy that because what we have to work off mainly are his public quotes, and his public quotes just don't make any sense compared to what he's actually executing in the roster. So
that's what he wants you to think. That's what he wants you to think. If you take all of his quotes and you put them side by side, they spell out success rate and DVOA. all right. So listen, as always, we're going to talk quickly about a few games this week that I'm interested in. And then at the end, we're going to do what we did last week. Instead of talking about the Thursday night game, you know, Charles is a huge Atlanta Falcons fan. It feels like that's more embarrassing to reveal to the world that you're 24.
Something embarrassing, like when you talked, what you were saying about Snacks Harrison wearing that mouth guard, like the first thing I thought of was Tevin Coleman showing off his mouth guard when he scored that touchdown in the Super Bowl because he had the same exact one. You know, just a little wave of sadness over me.
Yep. So we'll have a full Falcons segment at the end, but I know Charles, as a fan of the Atlanta Falcons, you don't like things to run long when you're ahead, so we won't spend too much time on it. Get it?
Yep. Okay. I got it.
Thanks. It'll be somewhere between 3 and 28 minutes. Okay, let's get to the first game, Jay.
Eagles versus Jaguars.
That's Jay Cutler. He does our reads for us. I don't know if you knew that. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I can tell. Sounds just like him.
So I want to talk about both these. I think there's like a lot of these teams kind of have a lot in common right now. Not substantively, not sort of the nature of what's happening to them, but the fact that I think both of them coming into the season, everyone was really, really high on them, right? And it does feel like, I don't want to say either team is necessarily in panic mode, maybe more so for Jacksonville, but certainly those expectations have not been met. And we were talking earlier, Charles, about trades and some trade possibilities, and there, I still feel, by the way, I don't want to say tumultuous because it's maybe overstating it, but there's been a lot more trade action and trade rumors than usual this year. Now, obviously, one of the people I wouldn't say Blake Bortles is at the center so much as the quarterback position in Jacksonville is subject to a lot of speculation right now. They've come out and said he's starting in London, which kind of makes sense to me. Although I'm concerned that Blake Bortles is going to do what Blake Bortles does, which is shred in London, right? And that's always the issue with him is that every like now and then when, you know, the moon is in position, he has this incredible game, often in London, but he'll have like a 2-game streak and then he turns back into a Blake Bortles pumpkin. So, you know, with Bortles, we know how he got here, which is that they paid him, and he had the 5th-year option, the injury and all that. But what do you think the Jags should do right now?
It's hard because you gave him all that money. So like that alone is internally enough, I guess, justification to start him. But when you look at what he's done this year, he's really only had 2 good games. And when you look at his game log just on ESPN, it's kind of funny because he has 2 games with a QBR over 80. The win against the Jets, he had an 80.9, and the win over the Patriots, he had a 94.6 out of 100. And he has 4 games below 30, which is just kind of shows you how all over the place he is. But you're right. Like, this is one of those games where he could absolutely just come out and shred them. I mean, the Eagles defense hasn't been nearly as terrifying as it was last year, as we saw in the 4th quarter. When the Panthers cut Cam loose and let him be Cam Newton, he absolutely destroyed that defense in the 4th quarter. I think he had like 200 yards and 2 touchdowns like in those 15 minutes alone. So I don't really see why Blake Bortles couldn't come out and play well. This is what, his 15,000th game in London, and this is the Eagles' first game in London. So like all the stars are aligning for a big Blake Bortles game, but in the same vein, like you can believe in Blake Bortles that he's going to have this big London game, but no one would be surprised if he came out and just had another stinker again. Like you just really don't know what to expect from him. And that's kind of part of the issue with giving him the contract extension. Like if you look at Blake Bortles' contract extension just through the prism of the AFC Championship game, where they come out and they just roll over them in the first half. And as they get down to halftime, they have timeouts in their pockets, but they just run out the clock because, you want to trust Blake Bortles, but at the same time, he's Blake Bortles. So, and then you get into the second half of that game, and instead of trying to be aggressive and put more points on the board, they're just sitting on the ball and they're running inside zone every first and second down and trying to make Bortles create something out of nothing on third down. So this is a quarterback that they don't really trust. Right after that game is over, a few weeks later, they turn around and give him that contract extension. It's like, wait, what? So why weren't you guys a little bit more aggressive if you have this quarterback that you trust? And then you get to a situation last week versus Houston where he fumbles in the third play of the game in a wide open pocket. Then he fumbles later and you have to come and put in Cody Kessler. So it's almost like they don't really have a real plan at quarterback, which kind of makes sense when you realize that Gus Bradley was the only guy that left Jacksonville. Everyone else is still there besides Gus Bradley. It's just Doug Marrone and Tom Coughlin at the helm now. So you still have Dave Caldwell. You still have Hackett. Still have guys that like Bortles in the building. So they're going to keep going back to him until they legitimately just cannot put him on the field anymore.
Which happened, right? I mean, he was benched. They've come out and said he has a short leash, which given everything I know about Blake Bortles and he's kind of a confidence guy. Like, I don't know if saying that he has a short leash is really going to incite, incredible play out of him. Look, it's not a great situation in Jacksonville right now on offense, which is to say, they paid Andrew Norwell. He's been okay. But the offensive line, has had a lot of injuries. I mean, you know, that you said, I'm sure, that they added Eric Flowers. I don't know if he's actually going to play, but they've had so many injuries at the tackle position. And then they decided not to pay Allen Robinson. They gave money to Dante Moncrief, who's not been great. And the last game I saw, the quarterback, the receivers had a lot of drops, but that actually hasn't been the case all season. So, you know, he's not exactly getting slotted into the Rams offense here, but he lost them that game. I mean, this last game I'm talking about against Houston, it was crazy to me. I retweeted someone saying, Blake Bortles is not the biggest problem. He fumbled twice inside his own 30, like, you know, and they lost by three. I think the Houston put up 20. It's like, I don't know how you can look at the defense and question the impact that his play has had on them. They're exhausted. They're exhausted. And yeah, they've regressed a little. And Danny and I talked about that a lot last week, Charles, but, you know, they're on the field too much. And you saw actually when they put Cody Kessler in, I laughed because Jeff Schwartz tweeted, watch the defense play better. And they did. They pitched a shout out after that. Like Jalen, you got Jalen Ramsey saying after the loss, quote, it's no secret what's going on here right now. Ain't nobody going to say it because we can't, but it ain't no secret what's going on and it ain't right. He has lost them. Okay. So as far as what to do now, he's got a 20 because of what you just described, which is their insane decision, you know, to pay him. He's got a $21 million cap hit in 2019. And, if you wait until after the season to cut him, I think it's like a $16 million in dead money or something. So it's not easy. And there aren't that many good quarterback options out there. So, you know, some of the names I've seen thrown around, I mean, there are a lot of guys who won't get traded, like Nick Foles won't get traded. I don't think Josh McCown would. Tyrod Taylor has been thrown out as an option. I think that's not a terrible idea. Obviously, it depends on what you give up for him. Teddy is the dream, but given how the Saints are treating this season, I'm kind of skeptical that they would do that. I mean, is there any quarterback, you know, wrapping this up, Charles, who you think would be, who is kind of realistic, who you'd like to see in Jacksonville?
I mean, outside the ones that you just named, I don't really think there are any realistic options. It's just, you know, they got to ride it out for the end of the season. And it's kind of a shame because this team is so much fun and they have so many personalities. But you know, coming off that 2017 season, you know, that pass defense was historically good. So they were bound to regress just, you know, based off natural regression. And the offense kind of had to step up and play better than they did last year. But the problem is you got an outlier year from Blake Bortles as well last year, and is only enough to be a slightly above average quarterback. And when he falls back to earth, everything else falls apart. And, you know, it just feels like that's what they're going to stick with for the rest of the season. And they're going to be hard headed about this.
Would you give up a second for Teddy?
Yeah, I would, but it would stink because, you know, if you let him walk, you're going to get a third in return for his comp pick. But still, that's probably a better option than rolling with Bortles for the rest of the season.
Rolling with Bortles. That's the saddest album ever. You mentioned that the Eagles got shredded in the fourth quarter. That was an interesting game by Carolina, who we're going to talk about a little bit later. That was an interesting game for me. Charles, I went back and watched because it really was like the Eagles were one team three quarters and Carolina was one team three quarters and then complete insanity, right? Complete meltdown on both sides of the ball. So when I talk about the Eagles and panic and regression and all that, I kind of have trouble diagnosing it because for three quarters, they looked like the 2017 Eagles to me. So I don't know if I want to say, oh, wow, like that's who they are. This was just a one-off. Do you, like, as an Eagles fan right now, do you think this team is significantly worse, or do you feel like they're just sort of regressing slightly and making some mistakes and putting things together?
I think the defense is worse. Just because last year, I think that they kind of overachieved at the cornerback position a little bit. I didn't think that going into the season, that was going to be a strength for them, but they actually turned out playing pretty well, and I think that they missed Patrick Robinson, who was with them last year. If that's the right guy, pretty sure it is.
He was, and then he went to the Saints and got hurt immediately. He had like a career year as a slot corner.
Yeah, and now you kind of get to a situation where Jalen Mills is, for some reason, going to stick in there and play a lot of snaps, and we've seen that, you know, if you're a receiver that's even like slightly above average at running double moves, you can probably get 100 yards against him. So, that like the drop off they've had in cornerback play, I think is pretty big for them. And that's a big reason why their pass defense has fallen off. I mean, last year they were fifth in adjusted net yards per attempt at 5.1. This year they're 16th at 6.4. So they're giving up almost over a full yard more in adjusted net yards per attempt, which kind of brings them back to an average pass defense. And you can kind of see where they're hurting on the back end in that fourth quarter. And also, you know, Malcolm Jenkins is really the only viable safety option that you have. So I don't really know where they can go from here. I think it's probably just going to have to be an offseason thing at this point, where you just kind of load up on defensive back in the draft and try your hand again next year. But you always have a chance with the Eagles because this defensive line is still ferocious. I mean, tackles for loss, getting pressure on the quarterback, they're still great there. Even with Derek Barnett gone for the season, like, you still have guys like Michael Bennett and Chris Long ready to play. And, you know, Fletcher Cox is still a monster in the middle. So I don't think all hope is lost with this defense as you move forward. But, yeah, that regression at cornerback really kind of can punch him in the face this season. And you saw that last week.
I think that's pretty clearly the problem, the biggest problem with this team. Yet they're still getting pressure, and you know, the offensive line, Jason Peters he's not quite what he was. Otherwise I thought at least through three quarters, they looked fine. Through three quarters, Carson Wentz looked great. He still does the hero ball thing a little bit. But he looked pretty sharp. The secondary is just a disaster right now. I mean, they had Dexter McDougal in there, who I was thinking of this week when, I don't know if you saw Booger, on Monday Night Football talking about peeing on the sidelines. Do you remember when Dexter McDougal peed on the sidelines? And that's my biggest memory of Dexter McDougal. Sidney Jones, you know, who redshirted, has been good, but he's got hurt, and that's why McDougal went in. Ronald Darby's was a disaster. You mentioned Jalen Mills. So I will say one last thing on the Eagles. You know, one name that has been thrown out for them is Patrick Peterson. And I mean, I can see they've reportedly reached out on him, and given what we just discussed, it's not hard to see why that. I think that would be very expensive, I'm guessing.
It probably would. But you know, he is under contract for the next two seasons after this one, and his contract hit for the rest of the season is only $6.5 million. And the Eagles do have $11 million in cap space, so if they're okay with kind of getting rid of some draft picks in order to make the thing happen, and then they have negative cap space for next season, but they can gain back $20 million of that by letting go of Nick Foles, which I'm sure is going to happen because you don't need to spend that much money on a quarterback. So, you know, there are ways to make that Patrick Peterson trade work for them. And just giving up the state, like, you're in a win now situation where Carson Wentz is still on a rookie deal and you still have a few years of leverage of that. I think if you're Howie, it makes sense that you're reaching out to them, and you just kind of got to make the Cardinals realize, like, hey, man, this season's kind of over. You might want to see if you can get some premium draft picks and draft picks you're looking for.
And how he's done that in the past, right? I mean, the Giants trade was pretty late in the season, but anyway, so yeah, I like it when good players go to good teams. You know, as long as they're not the Golden State Warriors. All right, next game, Jay.
Packers at Rams.
All right, so I haven't talked about the Packers yet, I don't think, on this podcast, which is part of the reason I wanted to talk about this game, because they are about to enter like a really difficult stretch of their schedule. I don't know if you've looked at it lately, but obviously the Rams are, in my opinion, the best team in the NFL. Then they've got the Patriots, the Dolphins, the Seahawks, and the Vikings. So that's not great. You know, the Packers are a weird team, Charles, because I think so much weird stuff has happened in this season. Weird football stuff, right? I mean, they could easily be 5-1 right now instead of they're 3-2-1, I believe, right? You know, absent that Clay Matthews roughing game, and then the Mason Crosby missing every kick game. But they could have also easily lost a couple of games as well. So it's hard to say. I think it does feel like yet another season where speaking of, you know, Carson Wentz playing hero ball, Aaron Rodgers is being asked to do too much. Do you think the McCarthy criticism and the Aaron Rodgers is carrying this team on the back, do you think that's overstated, or do you think it's fair?
You know, this is honestly the first time that I thought the McCarthy criticism was a little harsh, just because I don't think Aaron Rodgers has been playing all that great this season. And it sounds kind of, you know, it just sounds kind of weird to say. And it, obviously, like, he's still been good, but not like the Aaron Rodgers that we're used to seeing. I mean, even if you just go back to that Buffalo game where they won 22-0, there were a lot of plays left on the field by the Packers offense. And you know, there are just times this season where you see him missing like easy short throws to the flats or just spiking throws into the dirt over the middle of the field, like stuff you just don't see Aaron Rodgers do. And then, oh, he'll come back and do what he did versus San Francisco in the final drive of the game and remember how good he is. But, you know, I feel like there's been a little bit of a drop off in his play this year. I mean, he's still only thrown one interception on the season. Part of that is probably a little due to him being, I guess, a little hyper-conservative with the ball at times, yes, in terms of, you know, taking sacks or throwing it away instead of throwing another team. But, you know, I don't think Mike McCarthy has been great by any stretch, but you can point some fingers at Aaron Rodgers, too, with the Packers offense, like saying, you know, he can play a little bit better, and we've seen him play better in the past, and I don't think this is the decline of Aaron Rodgers. I think it probably has a lot to do with that knee injury that he's been playing with and been aggravating throughout the season. But this feels like the one year to me where not all of the blame needs to go on Mike McCarthy, and you can kind of split it around a little bit.
There was some actual, just to give a little credit to Mike McCarthy, I saw some really nice plays, and I watched about 3/4 of the Niners game just before this, and you know, they did some nice stuff. I think that first touchdown, I don't know if you remember, they had like a diamond formation. And I hadn't seen them do that sort of in the red zone. So it was, you know, I think you're right. I think I've always felt with McCarthy and Rodgers that it's such a difficult dynamic, because I think we watch some of the other offenses in the league, and everyone's now guilty of doing this to their teams in general and saying, well, the Rams have 20 guys open. Like, why don't we have 20 guys open all the time? And one, you know, and yes, there are things that the Rams and the Chiefs and the Bears, maybe, you know, in some offenses do that other teams should do, I think, in terms of not like run pass balance and when you deploy certain plays and whatnot. But I always felt with McCarthy and Rodgers, it's actually very difficult to coach a guy like him insofar as you don't want to mess with it in some way, right? Like, you have this guy, like, you have the best quarterback and the most talented quarterback, arguably, in football over the last, you know, several years or something. And you don't want to tell him, okay, here's the system, dude. Like, we're changing it. This is it. So I don't know. I don't know. But then I say that, and then I imagine Aaron Rodgers being put in the Bears offense or something. And that's insane. Like, they would have 6,000 yards a game, right? So maybe that's a stupid thing to say. I don't know, but I'm with you on, I have seen him kind of looking away from receivers. It does feel like he's been throwing it away a lot. And I wonder if that's a trust issue between him and some of his targets. You know, obviously there's been a lot of turnover in that area. The free Aaron Jones movement I'm a part of. I don't know if that's something you might see. And are you a member of the?
Yeah, I'm a big Aaron Jones truther. Free him.
You know, and especially in this game against the Rams, because you got to stay on. This is the stupidest thing in the world, but you got to keep that your offense on the field against Los Angeles. Hey guys, I don't know if you knew, but it works out well when your offense is on the field a long time against a good team. That's really innovative stuff.
Yeah, it. You know, if we want to bring it back to the Falcons, that's exactly what happened to them in the fourth quarter.
Oh wow, the self-owned, the Eminem style, 8 Mile. Look, you know, we don't have to talk about the Rams offense and the Rams, you know, and Aaron Donald and all that. But the one thing I did want to talk to you about with this team, something I'm going to be thinking about kind of going into this game, is Todd Gurley starting to get some MVP heat. And I hate the MVP discussion in general because nobody agrees what it means, right? Like, it's a semantics debate because value, like, if you're going to say most valuable player, I just gave away the game, it should be a quarterback. But that's not what everyone means. Like, some people treat it like best player. Some people treat it as most dominant player. My question to you is, do you think Gurley should be considered?
I think he should be considered. Like, I wouldn't have a problem with both him and Goff being considered from the Rams offense. I don't think it's a situation like when Adrian Peterson won, and you look at him like he's clearly carrying this offense, and you know Peterson was so valuable that year that they lost in the wild card round. So you know you kind of see where you go if a running back is like the focal point of your offense, because I mean the Rams do still have three pretty good receivers, a great offensive line, and an ascending young quarterback. So like they're really stacked on offense, but it's kind of hard to separate, for me at least, it's kind of hard to separate how much Sean McVay's scheme means to Todd Gurley, because I think we can all agree that Gurley is super talented and probably the best running back in the NFL right now, or at least, you know, top two or top three, however you want to rank these guys. But it's kind of hard to get out of your head what happened with, you know, the Jeff Fisher era. And he did have some good games as a rookie, but got completely shut down in his second year. And then Sean McVay comes and wow, everybody looks great now. So it's kind of hard to get that out of your head.
Literally
but,
everyone. Yeah, literally every player on that offense looks awesome.
On offense had a career year. And wow, somehow they're getting better off career years this year. Regression does not touch Los Angeles. So I don't really, like I said, it's kind of hard for me to separate the two between McVay and Gurley, because you just watch Gurley and he's so physically impressive. You know, just how he makes plays in the open field, the way he converts near the goal line. I mean, he can beat cornerbacks to the sideline, beat cornerbacks in foot races. Like you just don't see 230-pound backs move like that, run like that, be elusive like that, run people over like that. Like he really is a total package. But then when you look at it from a schematic perspective, you see how the Rams are using 11 personnel, the way they use jet sweeps, linebackers honest, the way they'll run their jet sweeps in the opposite direction from the linemen are blocking to create natural holes. And then you personnel that they have in the offensive line. You know, if Andrew Whitworth doesn't spend his entire career in Cincinnati, we probably think of him on the same tier as a Joe Thomas. John Sullivan has been great at center. Roger Saffold has had a resurgence since Sean McVay got there. And Rob Havenstein has come a long way from his rookie year in 2016 when he gave up like four sacks to Vic Beasley in that one game in L.A. So, you know, that offensive line is great. The scheme is great. Gurley's great. So it's kind of hard to – it's kind of hard to like just pull out him being the MVP of that offense when you look at all the different factors that are kind of going into making him being that productive menace that he's being. But I think I'll probably roll with Goff if I had to roll with one MVP from the Rams offense.
Yeah, it does feel like, to go back to the Warriors, you know, there's a bit of a Curry-Durant split in the vote thing for them that makes me think probably, I mean, at this point it would be Patrick Mahomes anyways, but you know, 538 had a story about Gurley, and the writer pointed out that he has faced more six-man fronts on his carries than any running back in football since McVay became the coach, which, again, credit for McVay to not pounding his back into an eight-man box like half the NFL. Yeah. But the 538 article pointed out also, I thought this was interesting, against those six-man fronts, he averages 5.5 yards per carry, as one does, but against a neutral seven-man front, he's below average. You know, you mentioned the line. Like, I remember when Zeke was a rookie and everyone said, well, you got to give some credit to the offensive line. You don't hear that as much with Gurley, and I think that's weird because I think this Rams offensive line is just as good. A lot of people would disagree. You know, that Cowboys line that year was obviously incredible, and they'll go down as – you kind of see that sort of era ending now a little bit, but that was probably one of the most dominant offensive lines of the last 20 years. But, man, this Rams line, when I watch games, they're so good. Okay, so again, when we're doling out credit for Los Angeles, it's just so hard because everybody deserves like a little share. And Goff also obviously owes a great deal to the line. So I'm with you. I just don't think – I think MVP, the way we consider it now, the way I personally consider it, it doesn't really make sense for me. All right, for the mailbag, we settled on a name.
Question. Question. Lenny, for your thoughts.
Wow, I hadn't heard that before. That is something. That's Mike Ryan, for those who don't know. Okay, I'm just going to burn through these really quickly. As always, I am answering, if you leave a review on the iTunes page, Please subscribe, by the way, and rate, and then unsubscribe, and then resubscribe, and rate again. I think that someone told me that. Mike Ryan told me that helps. Anyways, if you leave a question, I will answer it quickly. So I'm going to get through these. All right. Lucas Millie asks, should I be worried about the Eagles secondary? Yes. I think some of these are old, Charles, so that was probably like 3 weeks ago.
Yes, you absolutely
This is a bad one. Mark DePex. I don't know if this is satire. Nathan Peterman is my favorite quarterback. What does he have to do to get another shot, and how should he make the most of it? I'm going to treat this as... You got an answer for him?
No, because that's a crazy question.
Well, it might be sarcastic, but I'm going to treat it as non-satire. Nathan Peterman should maybe, like, go to the CFL, take a shot there. I don't know. Let me ask you, Charles, do you think he'll get another NFL start when all is said and done?
It's hard for me to say no because he shouldn't have gotten one this year, but I'm going to roll with no. I mean, everyone in the NFL knows how bad he is now. It's not a secret anymore. I mean, did you see the Houston game? I mean, he threw two picks in the last 90 seconds of the game to lose the game. So there's just no way to be confident. You can't walk up to a team and say, "Hey guys, we're putting Nathan Peterman on the field today," and that's that.
Forget the other team. Like, you can't tell your own team, right? Like, you can't. I don't know. It's just obviously it would be such a message to send. Mumani and I talked a little bit about this on a podcast, and I mentioned I watched Nathan Peterman a lot in the preseason. And he was really good. Okay, and I think he has that like reverse gamer issue, like where he's the opposite of being a gamer, right? Like there's clearly some kind of block there where he becomes a different quarterback in competitive play. Okay, Jim from Omaha, what were you like in high school? What do you think, Jim? I was a nerd. 13 Nick. How many rings does KD have in my personal record book? I'm guessing zero, same as in my personal record book. Bistrada 23, will any team sign Dez in which week? That's an interesting one. I mean, at this point, it feels like there's probably like a lot of reasons, right? It's something where it's not just football. I could still see like a really late desperation signing maybe. So Dez is going to catch the game-winning touchdown in the Super Bowl for the Patriots. Zunit, if you had a superpower, what would it be? I'm going to choose something that's just helpful to me now, photographic memory. That's really myopic because I could probably choose something that would like help the world, but that would help me watch games. You like that. Favorite Korean restaurant in New York City? I don't know if it's still open, but I like this place, Kunjip. I'm 32nd. Ray Bucks, Bolts, 1. What is something a majority of the people do that you didn't realize until you were an adult? I thought that it was pronounced broccoli rabe, like broccoli what? Rob. Rob the Slob. Who would you have as dinner guest? Anyone in the world? That's interesting too. I feel like I can't give a political answer. You know, I'm going to say Colin Kaepernick because God knows I have a lot of questions for him.
Wow, I thought you said
That's a football answer. YCK1000 asks, would you like to voice the character of Diane Wynn on BoJack? Okay, so this is the last question I'm going to take. No, so I made the mistake. I don't watch BoJack, and I saw a picture of her and the dog, and it's like an age. Do you watch BoJack?
Yep.
Okay, so you'll get this. So I saw a picture of this female character. It's an Asian journalist with glasses and her dog. Well, that was her dog. So I posted it, and I was like, me and Lenny. And people were like, they're in a relationship. Which felt like a Freudian slip of sorts. All right, moving on. Next game, Jay.
Ravens at Panthers.
All right, Charles, I'm just going to ask you straight up. Are the Ravens the best defense in the NFL?
Yeah, and I don't think it's very close. In a year where it's really freaking hard to play defense, they're somehow just suffocating people on a down-to-down basis. I mean, even last week versus Saints, for three quarters, they held Drew Brees and co. to 7 points. I mean, on the opening drive, they had a 20-play, 69-yard nice drive that ended in a fumble, and you just don't really see teams, one, hold the Saints to non-touchdown drives this year. I mean, they've been lighting teams up. And holding the Saints to that little output on a yards-per-play basis, I mean – 20 plays for 69 yards is pretty outstanding. And then holding them to seven points to three quarters, like that's not something you expect almost any defense to do. And if you just look at Pro Football Reference's expected point stats defense, they're by far in first, giving up, I guess their expected points output is 45, and the next closest defense is the Jets, and they're at 20. So, like, they're more than double what number two is. So, just when you look at just in the yards per attempt, yards per play, expected points, DVOA, like, I don't think there's anyone close in terms of playing defense. And somehow they figured out how to play defense in 2018 without a lot of turnovers, which is also impressive. Because, I mean, it's not even like they're getting a lot of interceptions or fumble recoveries or anything like that. They're literally just sitting on you until you punt the ball back to the offense.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because one thing you're hearing a lot now is, like, the only way you can play defense in 2018 is if you tighten up in the red zone and force turnovers, right? And that's kind of like the Patriots or something. You know what I mean? Like, that because of the rules and because offensive schemes and everything that is favoring this explosion of offense, you just have to contain them. And you're right. That's not what the Ravens are doing at all. And that's what's so fascinating. I was really excited about the Saints-Ravens game because I find myself, so I don't, outside of Seattle, I don't really care who wins non-Patriots division games, but I find myself rooting for defenses now every game I watch. Like I want like a defense to prove people wrong. So I went into this game. I wanted to see if the Ravens could, you know, pose a real challenge, I guess, to New Orleans. And obviously, while the Saints offense is incredible and Drew Brees is incredible, they're not as explosive as the Rams and the Chiefs. So that would be a different sort of test. But they really did hold up, and it's difficult because, you know, they do blitz pretty aggressively, and Drew Brees is just like, you can't blitz Drew Brees, basically. And you saw that in this game, you know, he gets rid of it so quickly and so accurately, and so they didn't get a ton of pressure on him, despite blitzing him a ton. He was 11 for 17 against the blitz. He leads all quarterbacks in passer rating against the blitz, which is not surprising. But he was having a lot of success outside the numbers as well. But despite that, for all the reasons you described, they have enough talent at every level in this defense that they were able to contain him, and they're so disciplined. And that's despite the fact that, you know, there's some injuries and weaknesses. I don't think Jimmy Smith, who has looked phenomenal since he came back, right? And you saw that a little bit in this game. Tony Jefferson struggled a little bit in this game too, I noticed. He had been very well, good before then. And Marlon Humphrey, I don't know what his injury status is, but getting him back will help a lot. But all of that said, I agree with you completely. I think this defense is just so far and away above every defense in the NFL. I don't know if that's enough, though, in 2018, right? I mean, obviously, Flacco has been much better than I think anyone could have anticipated. But do you think he's good enough right now with this defense to make them competitive?
He just might be good enough. One thing that I've been thinking about too, like, is what you just said, is in 2018, like, can a defense lead you to the promised land? Can a defense lead you to a Super Bowl? Because, you know, we all hear the cliche of defense win championships, but the truth is that offense travels a lot better than defense does when it comes time to win games in the playoffs. So, I don't know if the Ravens, you know, passing offense is up to snuff, because, I mean, their run offense has been, you know, a borderline disaster this year. But like from last year, they have one of the worst passing offense in the league. And this year they're, you know, around league average, which is a big, big improvement. I mean, they've jumped like 15 spots in just 8 yards per attempt on passing offense. So, I mean, that is a big deal. So I expect them to make the playoffs, but I don't know if this team can go on a run without the necessary offensive firepower. But, you know, with as good as that defense played against the Saints, like, that has to give you an encouraging sign if you're a Baltimore fan and you know that Justin Tucker missing an extra point at the end of the game is an aberration, and you even saw it in his face. Like, chilling. He's like, I don't do that.
How did you react when that happened, when he missed the extra point? I screamed. It was like a ghost passed through my body.
Yeah, I mean, most of my friends are Ravens fans, so I was just blowing up their phones for the most part.
I can't remember who was calling the game. I don't know if it was on CBS or someone, but one of the announcers pointed out, you know, oh, he's 71 for 71 on extra points in college, 222 for 22 on extra points. Normally, if announcers were hyping up a kicker, like, I'd be like, oh, he's going to miss, right? But Justin Tucker is so powerful as a force of nature that even though I was hearing that, like, I still looked away, kind of, you know what I mean? I wasn't like, oh, this could, and I let out, I don't want to say a blood-curdling scream, but it was loud enough to where my dog freaked out and started chasing his tail for 10 minutes. I was so upset.
Yeah, I was pretty stunned. I dropped an F-bomb in the comfort of my own home, but I'm going to get on this podcast.
Thank you. I appreciate it. We'll see when we get to the Falcons section. Yeah, really quick before we move on, you know, we talked a little bit about that Eagles game, and like I said, the Eagles were one team in three quarters and then another. Same with the Panthers. They were just absolute garbage for three quarters. And then suddenly, Cam Newton just became the best quarterback in NFL history. You know, they went no huddle, which, by the way, they should go no. I know, you know, it tires out defenses and yada yada, but they, given, I think, Newton's talents and the personnel they have, which is very versatile, you know, Christian McCaffrey and Curtis Samuel are really multi-purpose weapons. I feel like they should go no huddle more often. They don't need to sub in guys. And once they did in the fourth quarter, Cam Newton, I have a stat here. So he went 16 for 22 for 201 yards and two touchdowns in the fourth quarter after going 9 of 17 for 68 yards in the first three. Some of that is due to what we just discussed, which is the Eagles secondary completely. And their pass rush, which had been great the entire game, was clearly tired by the end. Another reason to go no huddle. But, I don't know really what to make of this Carolina offense at this point, Charles. I was just wondering, like a heat check right now for Newton and Norv Turner, who are kind of in the middle statistically right now. Like, do you have confidence in this offense, which is, I don't know. I really don't know where to place them in the broader scheme of NFL offenses.
I think that they can be closer to what they showed in the fourth quarter than what they showed in the first three. I mean, Cam is a guy that he benefits from playing up tempo, and I think you can just look kind of back to his college days at Auburn. Like, that's the style of offense that he thrives in, when he can just kind of run the offense and make decisions on the fly. Like, I think in that aspect of the game, just in terms of controlling the offense, he's a much better quarterback than people give him credit for. But I think the issue is not with North Turner or Cam Newton. I think it kind of comes back to Ron Rivera being a pretty conservative coach as it goes, just in terms of, you know, he wants to run the ball and play defense and doesn't really want to air it out and be one of those teams that throws it 45, 50 times a game, which is kind of where the league is trending. And I feel like he's a little bit behind in that aspect. But you saw what it could look like when they just throw all caution to the wind and spread it out and let Cam just do what he does best. And him being like the true focal point of that offense, where he gets to throw the ball and make decisions on ball handling. Like, he's just a really impressive talent, and he can process a lot of things at once. And that's the offense of the Panthers. That's the best version of the Panthers offense. And it just doesn't feel like that's who their head coach wants them to be on a weekly basis. And I think that that's like the big philosophical issue that they have in Carolina, because Ron Rivera will be much more comfortable with the game they had versus Cincinnati, where Christian McCaffrey gets the ball 30 times and he runs for almost 200 yards and you win that way. But there's something about like airing it out that it's just not as appealing to him for some reason.
Yeah, I could see this being a really low scoring game. The Ravens Panthers game. Before we move on, I just wanted one more, you know, I mentioned the John Gruden conspiracy theory. One more conspiracy theory that one of my Twitter followers kind of aired out, and now I love. So you know how whenever they put in Lamar Jackson in the Ravens on offense, Joe Flacco lines up perfectly still as wide receiver and doesn't move, like refuses to even pretend like he's going to run a route. Somebody suggested to me that that's all a long con for the Super Bowl, and he's going to run like a really long route, and no one's going to cover him because they're going to assume he doesn't move, and Joe Flacco is going to score the game-winning touchdown in the Super Bowl. What do you think?
I would be here for love that it. Just to see Lamar happy. I love
it. I want them to let Lamar throw. Let Lamar throw. Okay, last game before we get to our much hyped Falcons discussion.
Jets at Bears.
Thanks, Jay. That was a lot of enthusiasm from him. I mostly wanted to talk about this, Charles, because I want to talk about the Bears, who I haven't really spent a lot of time with. But, you know, we talk about the Ravens defense, and you and I both agree that they're the best defense in the NFL. The Bears still have the number one defense in DVOA. You know, and that DVOA is still shaking out right now a little bit. But, you know, the first few weeks of the season, I think they were regarded as pretty dominant. Obviously, Khalil Mack's been injured, and you saw that. He didn't even really rush in the last game. They had him dropping back into coverage against Brady. You know, the Pats game I thought was interesting because if you had to have a formula against the Bears defense, it would be what Tom Brady did, right? They didn't test him at all. It was just a lot of really quick short passes. That's Tom Brady. That's what he does. But do you think that this defense is maybe, I don't want to say they were overrated, but do you think perhaps that they're not as elite as we thought they were a few weeks ago?
Yeah, I thought that they were one of the elite defenses in the NFL a few weeks ago, though maybe those stats were a little bit inflated by the game they had against Sam Bradford and Josh Rosen, which was a complete disaster for the Cardinals. And then the next week you get what happened with Tampa Bay, and Ryan Fitzpatrick laid an egg, and then Jameis Winston came out and threw a pick, and that was an ugly game too. And obviously, like the Seattle game, they had seven sacks or eight sacks in that game.
I've blocked that out.
No, that's fair. They had a little three-game stretch where they just kind of beat up on some inconsistent offensive play, and Brock Osweiler came and punched him in the mouth somehow, and Brock Osweiler and Albert Wilson. And last week, the game plan against the Patriots was kind of weird because they were dropping Khalil Mack in coverage a lot in that
game.
But
do you think that's because he's hurt? Because I would do you think that they did, you know what I mean? It's because of his ankle or something?
Maybe, but still, even Khalil Mack on an ankle, I wouldn't rather have him in space than trying to get after Tom Brady. You know, I don't want to help Khalil Mack trying to tackle James White in the open field because James White's one of the best receiving backs in the field in the league, and that's just a difficult matchup for him. But it kind of does feel like this defense might have been a little bit overrated, and now you're just putting more work on Mitchell Trubisky's shoulders, and I don't know if he's ready for all that yet. But I think the defense is still very talented. Like they still have guys in the front seven that are making a lot of noise. Like outside of Mac, Akeem Hicks is having a great season. They got a stud rookie in the fifth round from Delaware, and Bilal Nichols, who I actually interviewed at the combine. He's a pretty interesting guy. And I still like their secondary. You know, Roquan Smith is still getting up to speed a little bit, but I think he's going to be a stud for them down the line. It just kind of feels like they weren't as sound as they were the first month of the season. They just kind of got to get things back in order, but they still do have the talent to do that. And Vic Fangio is still one of the best defenses in the NFL. So I wouldn't be surprised if they do get things straight, but I think we might have overrated them over what they did to, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick, who was turning back into Ryan Fitzpatrick and whatever Sam Bradford is right now.
Yeah, and by the way, I mentioned earlier, you know, the Patriots game plan against him. I just pulled this up. Brady only attempted 5 intermediate passes the entire game and 2 over 20. That they clearly went in with a plan. I think he targeted James White approximately 300 times in that game. I wasn't charting it, but I agree. You know, I felt like what they were getting out of Mack, who, you know, it is amazing, right? Because last week, Danny and I talked about the Chargers and like how they adjusted to the absence of Joey Bosa and the ways in which a single pass rusher can affect an entire defense. And I think you drop Mack in there and suddenly, oh, wow, Akeem Hicks is awesome. You know what I mean? Like when you got a guy who has to be double teamed, it certainly creates opportunities for other members of the front seven. And then when the front seven is able to do what they do, the secondary looks a lot better. And so there's always like a little bit of a cascade effect when you take out a dominant player like Mack, but when he's hurt or diminished, or as you just described, they're, you know, dropping him into coverage a lot. And I think you saw that with this defense. So it's entirely possible that when he returns to health, they'll they'll look better than they've looked the last couple of weeks. What I'm if I'm a Bears fan, Charles, what I'm far more concerned about is that Mitch Trubisky looked awful to me last week. And he's been good, not good, but like, he's shown a lot of promise at times this season, but I thought in this Patriots game, he was why they lost to me. Like, he was by far the limiting factor on that offense.
Yeah, I think he is the most limiting factor on that offense. And, you know, it's just not something that you want to see as a Bears fan when you look at, oh my God, Patrick Mahomes looks like the best quarterback in the NFL. And Deshaun Watson, while, you know, last week for Jacksonville wasn't a great game for him, when he's fully healthy, we've seen the damage that he can do. He threw for almost 400 yards against the Cowboys in that Sunday night game. It just kind of looks like you don't have a guy who really knows how to make plays in the passing game as your number two overall pick. Like you, and you traded up versus nobody to get him. You traded up from 3 to 2 with the 49ers. It just kind of looks like that was a pretty big mistake on their part. And, you know, like you said, versus the Patriots, like he couldn't hit a deep throw to save his life. Like anything over 10 yards was a real struggle for him to hit. He just doesn't really seem to process the field that well. I know he had the 6-touchdown game versus Tampa Bay, but we've seen that defense is a complete disaster this year. And it just doesn't look like Trubisky, not that he doesn't know what's going on, but he's just not really comfortable in what he's seen on the field. And now we're approaching 20 games in Trubisky's career, and he still hasn't made considerable progress from where he started to where he is now. And that's got to be really concerning for Bears fans. And just as you move forward, like you don't want to say that, okay, maybe we don't want to keep Trubisky now, but it does kind of put some doubt in your head as, is this the guy long-term, especially when you see the two guys that were drafted a few picks after him starting to play pretty good football.
Yeah, he went 2 for 13 on what NFL Next Gen Stats calls tight window throws, right? And so, yeah, he's definitely in some of those quote-unquote good games too. You know, he was hitting a lot of wide-open guys. And look, every now and then he drops dime, but he really lacks consistency. And I think what you were describing, the fact that he doesn't really trust what he's seeing, he's not willing to go through his read, like that is pretty visible to me as well. 20 games, man. I feel like I'm like, yeah, let's give a kid a shot. He just started, but you're right. He has played a lot of football. He's played a lot more football than Sam Darnold, who I'm higher on. Is that crazy? I mean, just kind of wrap up, you know, this game. Sam's been inconsistent as well. I think he's in a much worse situation. I mean, in the last game, he struggled. They didn't have a Nunwa. I don't know if you saw Bilal Powell just got IR'd too, which is going to hurt a lot. I don't know though. I was kind of high on him last week. I thought he had shown me a couple things against, you know, some pretty bad defenses, but the Jets defense is actually quite good in my opinion. So I don't know. Let me ask you this before to wrap this up. If you had to choose between Trubisky and Darnold at this point, who would you go with?
I would choose Darnold just because right off the bat, you know, Darnold has, while he's had some pretty bad games. I mean, last week was a horrible game.
Not great.
But you've seen him put together games like where you think, okay, you know, if we just give this time, this is a really, really young quarterback prospect. I mean, he's still only 21, right?
Yeah.
Even that has to give you some confidence. Like you've seen the good performances from such a young guy, and Trubisky's already 24. He's played in 18 games. He's thrown 20 touchdown passes. That's not very impressive in today's NFL. It's just, you know, I don't really know what the long-term upside is for Trubisky, but with Darnold, you've already seen him put together complete games. It's just more of him to do it versus some of the tougher defense in the NFL.
All right, so in lieu of the Thursday night game, in lieu of, I know you guys want us to talk about Patriots-Bills. I know everybody is extremely curious about that matchup, but I'm going to skip it because we've got the biggest Falcons fan I know here. I don't know that many Falcons fans, but you are one of them. And I can't do a Jay Cutler voice, but I'm going to try. Falcons versus themselves. That's what I'm calling this segment. I'm sorry. I'm so good at impersonations.
That was great.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Look, the Falcons, it's, they're so injured that it's kind of hard to even talk about them like a real team or evaluate them, if that makes sense. On defense, obviously, not on offense. So I want to ask, it goes without saying that the season has been disappointing. And before the season, I think we thought that, I don't want to say they would be a Super Bowl contender, but they were certainly in the mix in the NFC. Do you attribute all of this to injuries, or do you think it goes beyond that?
I think on defense, a lot of it can be attributed to injuries. I mean, just when you look at losing Deion Jones and Keanu Neal and Ricardo Allen, Neal and Allen out for the season, I think Deion Jones probably be out, probably back like week 10 or 11. But the drop off, I think the biggest issue is they didn't have much depth behind them. Outside of DeMonte KZ, has been great filling in for Ricardo Allen at free safety. I mean, the drop off from Keanu Neal to Jordan Richards has been, really hard to watch. Just going from a sure tackler at strong safety.
So bad.
Yeah, really bad. Keanu Neal was one of the best strong safeties in the league, in my opinion, just in terms of being a force of risk of run. Plus playing against tight ends that aren't named Travis Kelce. He's been pretty great in that regard over the past few years. And then you just get Jordan Richards, who can't really do either of that and gets run over consistently and doesn't make the right plays in space and can't really tackle the soul. So those issues have reared their head. And also the drop of Deion Jones to Duke Riley has been tremendous as well. They've kind of, or at least versus the Giants, they kind of were able to fill the gap a little bit with Bruce Carter and their sixth-round rookie, Foye Oluokun. So that's kind of helped. But outside of those injuries, I think the biggest issue on the Falcons' defense has been the regression of Vic Beasley over the past few years. I mean, his 2016 season where he had 16 or 17 sacks was kind of fluky in the regard that he wasn't getting a lot of pressure, but he was converting a lot of his pressures into sacks. Like he was converting his pressure into sacks.
Yep.
I think he had it was one of the best rates in years.
Barnwell is obsessed with this, by the way, because he was such a Vic Beasley truther when I was like, he's awesome. And anyways, what you're saying, Bill Barnwell is very obsessed with pointing that out, and it's proven to be a bit of a mirage.
In that 2016 season, I was aware that he wasn't getting pressure a lot, and he was mainly just beating up on bad tackles, which I thought was an okay place to be as your second year in the league. You know, you were a top 10 pick, and maybe you're not the most consistent pass rusher, but you're beating the guys you're supposed to beat. You know, like that's always a good step to me when you look at how defensive linemen evolve and mature throughout their careers. But that guy isn't even close to what we're getting now. You know, he's not even beating the guys that he's supposed to get past. I know he got past Chad Wheeler a couple times on Monday night, but even then, you know, you get to a point where it's time to flatten and turn your hips and get to the quarterback. And these guys are just, they're just falling on him and sitting on him, or they're just riding him out the pocket because he's just not nearly as strong as them or doesn't weigh enough to really compete with them. So now you're looking at a defensive line that isn't getting much production out of Vic Beasley, and Grady Jarrett's banged up. So you're relying on Tack McKinley, who is a good player to me, but as your leadoff pass rusher, you could probably do a little bit better than Tack. And I know that he has like six sacks on the season, which matches his total from last year. But he's still a growing player in his own rights. And I mean, he's only like a 22 or 23 year old second year player. So, he's still scratching the roof on what he can be, but you're kind of stuck where it's Tack McKinley and Deason Sanat, a third round rookie this year, who's not really a true pass rusher. And Jack Crawford has been kind of a journeyman guy throughout his career that are supposed to be leading your pass rush. And when you can't make plays in the secondary, it just makes it so much harder on your defense when you can't rush the passer either. So I think that the regression of Vic Beasley plus the injuries is just a big issue. And we probably did overrate the Falcons defense a little bit coming into the season. But still, like, the barrage of injuries, it's just forced them to fall off a cliff. But we did see what Grady Jarrett can do when he's healthy.
I was just going to say, I forgot he was coming back. And maybe it was like that when he sacked Eli, or it wasn't. Yeah, and he stuffed him on the sneak too. But I forgot that he was in there, and I was like, "Who is that?" And then I was like, "All right, it's Grady Jarrett. He's back. He's really good." And look, everything you say about the pass rush, I think, is really spot on. Although around these parts, we call him Protect, but also Attack McKinley. That's his official name. Only God can judge me. But I think, you know, Charles, the injury that has struck me as being a little bit more impactful than I perhaps anticipated was Freeman on the offense. I don't know. I thought that the running game would hold up better in his absence. I like Ito. So Ito Smith, and yes, he is named after Judge Ito, in case you were wondering. I think he has been better than his stats, if that makes sense, over the last few, or before going into Monday Night Football. You know, the run blocking is not fantastic. Okay. It's not what it was. And that's another sort of an issue, I think, for the run game, that maybe even if Freeman was in there, right, it wouldn't be as effective as it's been. But man, you know, it's really not gotten going. And yeah, like Tevin Coleman, he just looks a little bit less elusive to me than in previous years.
Yeah. The Tevin thing is weird. Cause even as a receiver, I don't think he's been as productive as people. I know he caught that big wheel route on Monday night, but his use as a receiver has not been great this year. And even last year, you know, the production was down from Shanahan to Sark in terms of Tevin Coleman's use as a receiver, but he was still a really good receiving back last year. I mean, he averaged 11 yards per attempt, or 11 yards per catch last year, which is pretty crazy for a running back, and now he's down to 9.1 yards per catch this year. So, you know, still a pretty good weapon in the passing game, but not as productive as he's been, and you kind of need him to be that extra weapon up the backfield with Freeman hurt. So I'm with you that Ito's stats don't quite show how well he's playing, and also part of the reason why Ito's yards per carry is low is because they use him around the goal line a lot. So there's not a lot of opportunity there's not a lot of opportunity for him to, I guess, squeeze out those extra yards, but they just don't run the ball well this year. And also the offensive line has completely fallen off the cliff. I mean, Alex Mack is starting to show signs of some aging a little bit, even though he has gotten better the past few weeks. Ryan Schrader has completely fallen off the cliff from where he was during that 2016 season and even parts of 2017 season. Like, the only real consistently good contributor on their offensive line is Jake Matthews, the left tackle, which is good because they just gave him that big contract extension this offseason. So him turning into a top flight left tackle matters, but you kind of see that the impact a top flight left tackle has doesn't matter that much when the other four guys are kind of getting that beat.
I feel like the way defenses play now, it doesn't matter quite as much as it used to. I noticed that as well in the Monday night game. You know, everybody was talking about how bad Eli Manning's protection was, but there were times when I was struck. I was like, you know, Matt Ryan's getting his butt kicked too. The difference is he doesn't self-sack, right? He actually stands in the face of pressure. I mean, you know, if you ever wanted to complain about Matt Ryan and Sark, watch that game and then, you know, shut up, right? Because the contrast is stunning. But I think you're right. It is amazing how hard it is for offensive lines to consistently stay good over the course of many years in the NFL. And we talked, I remember during the Super Bowl run, a lot about how healthy they were. I think they had the healthiest offensive line in football this year. And that stuff always comes to an end, you know? And I do think this offense is still really, really good. Okay. And you know, the Ridley pick clearly worked out. but you know, you can have a fantastic offense where everything's just like a little bit worse and the run game's a little bit worse and the offensive line's a little bit worse and play calling is, you know, it's Sark and he's not terrible. I think it's kind of some of the way Falcons fans treat him is a little bit unfair given what we have to deal with in Seattle. but it does add up to just a slightly worse product. So I guess I want to wrap this by asking you, Charles, like, do you think this is a lost season? Like, what would you optimistically hope for as a Falcons fan for the rest of this season from Atlanta?
I feel better at being 3-4 heading into a bye. I would have felt better if, you know, one of those NFC South teams that lost on Sunday, all three of them won in dramatic fashion at the end. But I think you still just kind of got to wait and see what happens, because this team, they do have the top end talent to beat anybody any week. It's just kind of, can you get enough support from the defense to make that happen? But if they start losing games again, like if they come out the bye and lose their game to Washington, or if they lose their game at the Browns, I think I'm going to be over this season and just tank and get me a better draft pick and keep Deion Jones, protect my son, keep him on the sideline if the season's long.
I love him.
He's so good. He's so good.
Oh, but by the way, Oluokun, you mentioned, he's a Yale guy. He went to, which, so I don't even remember the last time a Yale alum was in the NFL. And they mentioned that very briefly during the broadcast. And I was shocked.
It's funny because one of my best friends that I've known for almost 20 years now, he went to Yale. And he was like, Charles, you got to keep an eye on this Foye kid. He's so good. He's legit. I'm like, all right, man, whatever. Like, he's a 6th-round pick. I'm not going to pay him any mind. But he can play. He's a stud. So I'm pleased with that return on a 6th-round pick. And it's kind of weird because strangely the Falcons have been pretty good at drafting on day 3 over the past few years. I mean, just look at like Devondre Campbell, Grady Jarrett, DeMonte KZ, now Foye Oluokun. Like, in the Dan Quinn era, they've been pretty good at finding guys in that day 3 era, in that day 3 range, to like who fit their culture and what they're looking for. Just kind of find a way to keep these round 1 guys healthy and get Vic Beasley engaged again.
So record prediction?
They still got games against the Saints, the Ravens, the Packers, Panthers again. So I think 6-10 is probably a realistic record for them at this point of season.
All right, and so before we finish here, let's get to the final segment.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
I'm still not getting paid for this. Okay, so Super Bowl's in Atlanta. Obviously, a lot of people have made fun of the choice of hat. I don't know if it's official or if it was a rumor that Maroon... I think it's official. Maroon 5's performing, which feels disincongruous for another reason. So as an Atlanta person, I want to ask you, who would be your dream Super Bowl performer? Not realistic, just if you could have anyone perform the Super Bowl this year.
Oh, man. If I could have anybody perform this, does it have to be someone that, like, other people
alive
would like?
No, but it has to be someone alive. You can't be like, Jimi Hendrix.
I think I would go with Anderson .Paak. I don't know if you've listened to him before. He's got, like...
Yeah, Korea's finest.
Wait, he's from Korea?
No, but he's Korean. I mean, he's half Korean, right? Or listen, he's definitely part Korean. His mother is of African American and Korean ancestry, according to Wikipedia. Like, the Asian group chats, we keep track of this stuff.
Yeah, so we're on the same team here. You know, half of me, half of you.
It's unifying. But I like it. Are you a big fan?
Yeah, I'm a huge fan. His music's a little bit problematic, but he's got that raspy, soulful voice that I like a lot. So I could definitely jam out to him while I get over the Falcons not being able to play at home in the Super Bowl.
Okay, question 2. If you were guaranteed that it wouldn't hurt your career in any way, would you quit Twitter?
Yes. Okay. Can I come back with a burner account for my DMs?
No.
No, I wouldn't.
You would need it to communicate with people, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. 3. Rank the top 4 receivers in the NFL.
As of now? Like, just for the season? Mm-hmm. I'll go with Julio, no touchdowns, Adam Thielen, DeAndre Hopkins, and, I was just watching this person. Now the nine escapes me. I'm going to go with Tyreek Hill, too.
Yeah.
Tyreek Hill, Hopkins, Thielen.
What about if you were building a team and you had to, you know, pick three receivers? Who would you pick? And don't worry about, you know, contracts and stuff. Just pure talent vacuum.
I would probably Odell, Julio, and I think I would go with Michael Thomas.
Wow, I like him. No AB. All right, question.
I'm just sitting on a Steelers receivers take that I don't know is this podcast ready for it?
Okay, what is the take? I have to hear it.
I think Juju's better than AB.
That's insane. Okay, number four. What is your favorite meme?
My favorite meme? Oh, man, God, there's so many. But right now, the one that's "This ain't it, Chief" has just been killing me. Also, anything, not endorsing the person, but any Alex Jones video just, like, cripples me to my knees in laughter.
I like the one where it's, like, two fists or two arms, like, meeting in the middle and, like, two things that have something in common that's in the middle. Anyway, it's a great description for the listeners.
Yeah.
All right, so for the fifth question, we're doing a new thing where Lenny wants to be more involved in the podcast. His name's on it. He's not getting paid yet, but so I said he could submit a question one out of every five. And also, he wanted me to read it in the voice that I assigned to him when he communicates with me at home. So, look, I'm going to read it in Lenny's voice. Lenny wrote this, so don't get mad at me.
Okay.
Charles! I'm sorry. That was too high. Charles! Would you rather fight 28 falcon-sized Patriots or 3 Patriot-sized Falcons?
Great podcast, Lenny.
You got to answer. You got to answer.
I'll fight the falcon-sized Patriots.
All right. Thank you so much for coming on, Charles. Sorry about the disrespect from my dog. I don't know why he asked that. It was really rude. I can't explain it.
All right. Thanks for having me on.
I thought it was a great question, but, you know. Listen, thanks for listening. Thanks to Charles for joining us today. If you guys don't already subscribe, please subscribe. Tell your mom to subscribe. Tell your aunt to subscribe. Leave a review. Question the review, I'll answer it. Please rate. It helps. And yeah, we'll be back next week.